move a muscle. The podcast is starting.
Hello and welcome to Podrificus Totalis, a Harry Potter read-along podcast. I'm Joe. And with me, as always,
is me, Cassie.
Hello and welcome to Podrificus Totalis.
That was fine. We can keep that.
Okay.
Yep. All right.
And this week we are diving into chapter three of the Harry Potter and the Chamber of Secrets, The Burrow.
Yeah. This is going to be a long one. So by comparison, I haven't edited it yet, but the last episode I think is going to clock in at like 25 minutes. And I had one page double-sided for that one.
Of notes.
For this chapter, I have five written pages of notes.
This is going to be interesting.
Mm-hmm. So buckle up.
And I'm sorry.
Yeah, so we are going to start with the chapter summary. As always, it is Joe's turn to do it this week.
And thankfully, the one thing that does have to be short would be our summary. So Cassie has 30 seconds on the clock. And
let me know when to start.
Well, you started, I'll start.
Okay, I started.
Okay. In this chapter, Harry sees Ron in his window, and Ron is in a flying car at his window with his two brothers. Well, two of his brothers.
You've used half your time.
All right. They break into his house. They get him out. Fred and George do some ninja stuff to steal his stuff. They go to the Burrow, and Harry really likes the place.
That was 32 seconds. Ooh, you really got to work on those.
I'll get better eventually.
You know what makes them a lot easier is if you write them down first.
That's cheating.
It's truly not. I love this chapter so much. Like, so much happens, but also like very little happens. But like, so much happens in my heart and in my emotions.
Cassie really likes Molly Weasley. So any chance to talk about Molly Weasley?
I love
will
all
lead
the
to five pages of notes.
I love all of the Weasleys. I love Molly in particular. I love the Burrow, and I'll have you know that my notes on Molly Weasley are like almost a full page of the five. But we have to start at the beginning. So as Joe said, Ron appears in Harry's window, which is the weirdest possible way to describe what actually happens.
Well, it takes Harry a little bit to realize that he's in a car.
Ron is in a car.
Yeah.
Not Harry.
Harry is in his
bedroom. Which he's caged in.
Yes. So they knock on his window and tells them that he's basically trapped in there. So they tie a rope around the bars and rip the window off.
You're flying through. I have so much to talk about. Okay. So first of all, the chapter opens by saying that the flying car is parked in midair outside of Harry's window. Do you think that they shifted the car into park?
Yeah, or else it would have idled away.
I'm so curious about like how the car works and like operating a flying car. Like, how do you move up
it's
and down?
Magic.
Okay. Okay, so on the Prindle, it was in park. Yep. Although I guess this is England, so they probably, it's a manual. So there is no Prindle.
Okay.
Yeah. Okay, the flying car is parked in midair.
I'm pretty sure manual cars still have park.
Yeah, there's still park, but it's on the gear shifter, yeah. Like with the gears.
Yeah,
you know, there's no, like, is there neutral?
I don't know.
You have claimed to me to know how to drive stick, so I'm asking you.
I have never claimed to you that.
You have. You
absolutely
have.
You're the only one
have.
Who's driven a...
You never have?
No.
Oh boy. We gotta learn. Yeah, so a gear shifter on a manual, at least from my recollection, which is not good. It goes like 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, and then park is somewhere on there. But no, there's not like a stick for the shifting and a Prindle. That's not how it works.
I'm well aware.
Okay.
Yeah.
Well, You've never driven a stick. So. All right. So they're in park. The chapter also writes explicitly that Ron is in his car with his elder twin brothers. And this stood out to me because as somebody with siblings who are twins, this is the most awkward thing to describe to people. Like, I always want to say, like, yeah, my twin siblings, like this as my elder twin brothers. But that, I feel, implies that they're my twins. But of course, I can't have twins, twin siblings, plural. You know, you have one twin. Mm-hmm. It's just, it's so hard to express. And so I wanted to talk about
elder brothers who are twins.
Yeah, it always has to have the siblings who are twins. So this just says elder twin brothers, which, like, you can deduce from it being plural that they are twins and Ron is not twins with them.
Yeah.
But it's awkward to express. All right. And so now you talked about the rope. I have a lot of questions about this rope.
It's some high quality rope.
It's a magic rope.
It doesn't have to be a magic rope.
It doesn't have to be a magic rope.
Good rope.
Yeah, but why did they know to bring this rope?
They didn't. Like, they just knew. They just had rope. They're the Weasley
just
twins.
Had rope sitting in the car?
Yeah.
Why?
They had to tie stuff to the roof.
Like, I can't imagine they were anticipating him being in a cage.
If you've got a lot of luggage, you would tie it to the roofs of the car.
Not
so it fits
to
in.
The type of car that they're driving.
I mean, not to a flying car.
I have more questions about the luggage, too. So you say they do some ninja stuff to get, you know, all of his belongings, and then they pull the trunk. There's a lot of detail about this. Like, they push the trunk from one end, and Ron and I think Fred pull the trunk from the inside of the car, and they put it in the back seat of the car.
Yes.
And then they all climb in the car.
Mm-hmm. Because they don't have time to tie it to the roof.
Okay. And the rope is already used. It's a one-time use rope.
The rope is not a one-time use rope.
But where are they sitting if the trunk is in the back seat?
If the trunk... Oh.
Yeah.
See, the confusing part of saying that sentence is there's a trunk to a car and then there's Harry's trunk.
This is English podcast, so the trunk is the boot. But also they don't use the trunk of the car. But Harry's trunk is in the back seat of the car.
Yeah.
And then they sit in the back seat of the car.
Yeah, and then tiny 12-year-old Harry and Ron are on either side of it.
Ron is in the front.
Ron is driving?
I think he is driving. Yeah, because Fred and George get out.
Yeah, but it's in park, so it's fine.
Okay, but you're dodging my question. It doesn't matter who is in the backseat. It matters that there's a trunk and at least two people in the backseat.
Yeah.
How do they fit?
Yeah, just smush a little bit.
Okay. I thought a lot about this, and then as I was doing the rest of my notes, I realized that in a future chapter, the car is enchanted to fit more than the amount of people that we usually sit in the backseat.
Well, we can discuss that in the future chapter.
Yeah, it just
and not
it
leave
bothered
this
me. Well, I'm going to leave that. That's not a spoiler, John.
Well, we can talk about it later.
Yeah, we'll talk about it later. Okay. More about the car. Are you about to move on from the car? Because I'm still in the car.
Well, we're definitely not at the borough yet, if that's what you're asking.
No.
But I want to get back to Fred and George
doing the ninja stuff.
Yeah. So they climb into Harry's window.
Yeah.
And with just a bobby pin, unlock Harry's door.
That's a good point. Because usually don't you need two things to pick a lock?
Usually.
Yeah.
But I guess if you bend it the right way, maybe.
Sure. And a bobby pin. Do you know what a bobby pin is?
Yeah.
Okay.
It's got two little prongs.
Yeah. It has the two prongs. So I guess theoretically, if they're really good at it, they could do it somehow.
But they talk about how, most wizards would say this is useless, but they're saying like, it's a good skill to have.
I mean, it becomes useless once they're allowed to use magic outside of school.
Yeah, but at the moment they can't. So
I guess if you
perfectly.
Didn't have your wand, it would be useful.
Yeah.
Yeah. Cool. Can I talk about the car more?
Well, so I want to talk about how they get into the car as they're pushing, like the trunk is already in the window, and I don't know how big this trunk is.
I assume that they open the door. They push Harry's trunk through his bedroom window.
Yeah, but
into
it's still
the car.
Like it's still halfway through the window as one of the twins also gets out the window while the trunk is there to pull it.
The window could be big and you could climb over it, climb into the passenger seat of the car.
So he just like climbs up over the trunk.
Sure.
Okay.
Or I guess mean, if the window is wide enough, he could.
I think they ripped the window off, so it doesn't really matter.
They ripped the bars off. I don't think that they ripped a hole in the Dursley's house.
You never know.
Plus, they do mention that there's a dresser in front of the window. So, like, I don't know. I feel like that would make it easier somehow.
Well, it's not only leaning on that little.
Yeah, on the windowsill.
Windowsill, yeah. Yeah.
All right. More about the car. So, correct me if I'm wrong. Did they not mention that the car is a Ford Anglia? I don't think they did. They say that
just
it's turquoise.
An old turquoise car.
Yeah. I'm wondering. I wasn't able to figure it out, but where they specify that it is a Ford Anglia specifically. Like, is it something that came about through the movies or in the book somewhere? Are you control effing in the book?
Essentially, yes. Okay, it's first mentioned in chapter 5.
Oh, okay. So it is later in the books. Okay, that's just like a really specific detail that I've had in my head about the car. And so when the car is first introduced, I'm like, why isn't it on a Ford Anglia? Okay. Other thing, in 1999, J.K. Rowling said in an interview with Barnes & Noble that the car would come back, but she did not say how.
Yes, I believe she planned for the car to come back and she couldn't fit it in.
Okay. I just thought I'd bring that up. And then some interesting stuff about the car's license plate. So it's not specified in the book, but on the UK edition of Chamber of Secrets, the like cover is Harry and Ron in the car. And in that, the license plate reads HOW777.
Okay.
And this... the artist that did the cover, Cliff Wright, said that J.K. Rowling provided to him directly. Like, he didn't just make this up as a filler. In the film, it is 7990TD. On Pottermore, it is COS207, which is a reference to a page number. But it's page 207 of Chamber of Secrets, so we're not there yet.
Mm-hmm.
And then in Hogwarts Mystery, which is one of the mobile games... on the loading screens, you can see the car, and it is 930TRS.
Okay.
So it's different everywhere. and, like, I wanted to look at those and see if there was some kind of significance to them. Obviously, the COS207 one is pretty easy. But HOW777, I thought, was an interesting one for Rowling to...
provide.
Yeah. And I have no idea what it could stand for. I mean, 7 is a recurring number in the Harry Potter series. 7 books, 7 years at Hogwarts... 7 other things that I can't talk about because they're spoilers, but 7 pops up a lot. So I don't think that's such a mystery. I just, it's something I wondered about. So send us your theories on the Ford Anglia license plate to owlpost.podrivagastotalis.com. Yeah. I don't know if you can make any sense out of them. I also don't know what the schema is for license plates in England, because ours here in the US, provided you don't get a vanity plate, follow the 3 letters and then 4 numbers schema. But I don't know how it works in the UK. So that's everything I have about the car.
For now.
About the car specifically. We're still at Privet Drive.
So they get everything into the car and they're ready to
jet off. Yeah.
They're, you know, Harry's in the windowsill. He's about to hop in and Hedwig screeches.
And to this point, they specify that Hedwig was like quiet the whole time.
They say like Hedwig knew what was up. Hedwig knew, all right, it's time to be quiet.
Yeah.
And then Harry almost leaves without her. And Hedwig's like, hey, man.
I was going to use a bad word. What a bad thing to do for your friend.
But clearly it wasn't on purpose. It was a lot of, we need to sneak out of here.
But it's Hedwig.
Need to rush. Yes. And I'm sure
Hedwig has been Harry's only friend for the whole summer. And then he gets a chance to go and he's like, peace.
Obviously, it wasn't that.
Sure. But it's clearly very careless.
But he wanted to put Hedwig in last so that
he could sit next to Hedwig.
so that Hedwig wasn't just thrown into the trunk.
I know.
And crushed by a bunch of stuff.
Thrown into the back seat.
So then once it was chaotic getting his trunk into the car, I could see him in that brief moment forgetting Hedwig.
Sure.
It still doesn't feel good.
Yeah.
But I love the idea that, like, Hedwig realized and said, no, like, you're not leaving me behind.
Yeah, that is pretty good. So Harry goes back through the window to go get Hedwig. And
as soon as Hedwig screeches, Vernon, who at this point has coughed twice.
Vernon wakes up.
That ruddy owl. And that screech was enough for Vernon to say, I need to open this door and yell at Harry.
Well, because up to this, in the past two chapters, it's been mentioned that Vernon is pissed that Hedwig keeps making noise.
Yeah.
So, like, it waking him up in the middle of the night is, like, the last straw for him, I think. So he's like, we're going to do something about this owl now.
Like, I'm going to throw this owl into the street. And
I don't know if his plans are that nice for it. But so he freaks out. He comes into the room to find Harry, like, halfway through the window,
yeah,
trying to escape.
If he had thought to lock the door again, if Harry
lock himself in?
Yeah. Lock the door back up.
Oh, if it was like Harry, Fred, and George had thought that. I thought you meant if Vernon thought to lock himself in the room.
No.
Like cage match style. no, yeah.
Then he would have had more time and, you know, it might not have been as pressing as it was.
Yes.
But Vernon grabs onto Harry and tries to pull him out of the flying car and back into the house.
I have questions about this. Why would Vernon care that much? Like, he's freaking out. He's like, Petunia, he's getting away. And he grabs Harry. But, like,
they
hate Harry. Let him go.
But the same reason they were refusing him, or refusing to let him go to school in the first place.
Like, were they refusing to let him go to school?
Yeah, that's
like,
why.
That was the point of locking him in the room? Oh, okay. All right, fair.
So
okay. It still seems weird. I do like how the movie embellishes this scene by having Vernon flip through the window and fall in the bushes.
Yes.
It's pretty good, but that doesn't happen here.
No, they just all stare at him as he flies away.
Yeah, and Harry's like, see you next summer.
I know. I love that of like, yeah, I'm coming back.
Yeah.
Like, I already know I'm coming back here after we ripped a hole in the side of you, in the side of your house and pried my leg from your fingertips.
It's funny. It reminded me, too, because last chapter had the line from Mafalda. She sends that like scary letter of like, do not do magic outside of school. You're risking expulsion. Have a nice holiday.
Yep.
And this one. Yeah, it connected in my brain. So they fly away.
Yes, they fly away. And Hedwig gets to fly, too.
Yes, they let Hedwig out. She gets to fly next to the car like a ghost is the simile that's used. Yeah. And so they have a little conversation as they're flying because it's a longish trip. And part of that conversation is Harry telling them all about Dobby and how Dobby warned him and trying to get him not to go back to Hogwarts. And Fred and George are like, somebody's messing with you, buddy. Like, who at school has a grudge against you? And Harry's immediately like, Draco Malfoy. Mm-hmm. And Fred and George talk a little bit about the Malfoys. And they say Lucius was in Voldemort's inner circle. And then once Voldemort died, quote unquote, Lucius came back saying like he didn't mean any of it and blah 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 blah, and they say that they've heard all of this from Mr. Weasley, and I really question the judge. I mean, I question Mr. Weasley's judgment on a lot of things, but I question his judgment to spread these rumors. And like, Mr. Weasley's right, they're bad people, but like, to speculate that a prominent member of society whose child that Harry and Ron go to school with is a former Death Eater. Like, that seems like he might be crossing a line to tell his kids about this.
I don't know. I don't know how much older are Fred and George?
I think 2 years.
2 years. Yeah. Okay. So it's not like they were.
It's not like they're in the same grade as Malfoy. Sure. But like, Lucius.
But that's not
is
what I'm thinking. I'm thinking if 11 years ago, Voldemort was still in power.
12. But okay.
No, because Harry was one when everything
went down. True. Okay, 11.
So if 11 years ago, like, then Fred and George were three, so it's not like they were really old enough to remember it.
Okay.
But I could see him ranting about it to their older siblings, if they're significantly older.
And, like, Fred and George overhearing it. Okay. It still seems weird to, like, come home, complain about your coworker, and then be like, you know, he used to be a Death Eater.
But I mean,
it's true. Yeah. So I want to talk a little bit about Fred and George, because I don't think that I really introduced them when they first showed up in the books. And I would argue that this is like their most prominent scene to this point. Like, they didn't have a huge role in Philosopher's Stone.
No, not a huge one.
Mm-hmm. So the Harry Potter Wiki speculates that they were named for their uncles, Fabian and Gideon Pruitt, who were killed in the First Wizarding War. Obviously, Fabian F., Gideon G., Fred and George. Rowling wrote on her website that she picked the names Fred and George because she liked them, and they fitted well with the old-fashioned names of the other Weasley brothers. They were born on April Fool's Day, and Rowling says that they're some of her favorite characters. She also described them as risk takers in 2005 who just take a totally different life path than their brothers. Nothing really too big or in-depth there, but some good backstory on them.
Yeah, and all fits with their character.
Yeah, well, the April Fool's bit especially.
I guess I kind of like the idea that Fred and George don't immediately go to, oh, there's a big plot against Harry Potter right now.
I mean, but that's because they, so it's like a recurring thing, I think, in the books that like something goes wrong in Hogwarts and Harry and Ron are like, it was Malfoy. What's the evil plot here? And I think to some degree that's informed by them having previous contact with evil plots and having to like thwart evil plots often. Mm-hmm. So I totally understand Fred and George being like, that was probably a prank somebody was pulling on you. I like to think, too, that to some degree they kind of respect it. I'm like, yeah, send your house elf to somebody to try to trick him into not coming to school. I think that's kind of funny.
Yeah, to an extent. Yeah.
Yeah. But I like that they're kind of taking Harry back down to earth. And he's like, man, I really did like freak out about that. Like, maybe it was just a joke. And so I like the idea that they bring levity.
But also, it's not even that he starts thinking, oh, maybe it was just a joke. It was more like, well, should I have trusted Dobby as much as I did?
That too, yeah.
So not as much like, oh, is somebody planning to kill me? But was Dobby sent to trick me?
Yeah, yeah. And to be fair, Harry does think like, I mean, he seemed pretty genuine. He was like punishing himself to be there. But yeah, it does call into question whether Dobby is reliable.
And even if he had the right intentions
in being there.
Yeah.
Yeah. Another thing that they talk about is how Ron was saying, like, we were trying to get in touch with you. We were getting worried because I sent you like 12 owls and nobody and like never heard back. And he's like, I assumed that it might have been Errol. And Errol is the Weasley's family owl. And Ron is like, yeah, he's terrible. He's super old and just unreliable. Mm-hmm. And I wanted to read some comments that Rowling made about Errol because I really like Errol. So this is coming off of the Harry Potter lexicon. And they say it comes from Pottermore. Pottermore has gotten all messed up recently because it got moved to like a paid service. So some things are still there and they change the layout like every 2 years. So things move around a lot. So I'm reading off the Harry Potter lexicon. Apparently this comes from Pottermore, but it's on the Harry Potter lexicon page. And this is directly J.K. Rowling saying this. She says, when I dreamed up Errol, the aged, long-suffering, and overworked family, Weasley family owl, I had in mind a picture I thought I had seen, which featured a very comical, large, fluffy, gray, bewildered-looking bird whose breed I had never known. In fact, I wondered whether it had been a real photograph or whether imagination was distorting the image. It was with sheer delight, therefore, that I rounded a corner on my very first visit to the Avery at Levensden Studios, where they were filming Harry Potter and the Philosopher's Stone, and saw a line of big, gray, fluffy, bewildered-looking owls looking back at me, each an exact replica of the half-remembered picture I thought I might have dreamed. They were all playing Errol, and they are great grays, which is the breed of owl. Mm-hmm. And then a later comment, or another comment of hers was, poor exhausted Errol is a great gray, which in my opinion is the most comical looking owl in the world. Just Google the great gray to see what I mean. And there's a very funny picture on the lexicon page of Errol. Like it's an illustration that a fan did. And I really enjoyed it. So Errol, I really like Errol. I think Errol is really funny. And as far as etymology on Errol, I couldn't find much. There is a dragon named Errol in Terry Pratchett's Guards, who, according to the Harry Potter Wiki, flies into windows and has a tendency to explode. I have not read any Terry Pratchett stuff because, God, I have a life and I don't need it to be consumed by Discworld. Yeah, that could be true.
But yeah, Errol is not the most reliable owl.
No.
And Obviously, we don't see much of him yet, but he does have a habit of flying into windows. So.
Yes. And Ron does mention that he wanted to borrow Hermes, which is Percy's owl that he received as a gift when he became a prefect. And Hermes, of course, has a pretty explicit etymology, being the messenger.
Messenger, yes.
Yeah, of the gods in Greek mythology.
But Percy is too busy writing letters of his own.
Yeah. Yeah. George mentions that Percy's been doing that and staying shut up in his room all summer, which is a fun little subplot in the book. I don't know if it's supposed to be a misdirect where we're supposed to, like, suspect Percy of something.
Well, yeah, he was sending out letters so that Hermes could steal Harry's letters.
Yeah. I don't know if it's supposed to be that, but I think that's a fun little thing that's running through this book that you don't learn the resolution of until the end. And another seed that Rowling kind of harvests later is Ron mentions that Arthur works at the Misuse of Muggle Artifacts office at the Ministry. And part of that job is using memory charms on Muggles who discover magical objects. And so that'll definitely come up later.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, big time.
But as someone who works at the misuse of Muggle objects.
Muggle artifacts.
Muggle artifacts.
The MMA, if you will.
He misuses quite a few Muggle artifacts.
Yeah, yeah.
The car itself being one of them. And apparently he has a full shed of things that he's taken apart, enchanted, and put back together.
Yeah. And I really like Molly and Arthur's exchange about that later in the chapter when he's like, "My dear, you'll see that there's a loophole where I can enchant the car as long as I'm not intending to use it." And she's like, "You wrote that loophole in." It was really good. I really enjoyed that. Yes. So they fly and eventually they get to the village of Ottery St. Catchpole, which the borough is outside of. Fun note there. This is also home to two other prominent wizarding families, the Diggorys and the Lovegoods, who will appear in later books. And fans assume that this village, Ottery St. Catchpole, is based on the real town called Ottery St. Mary. Ottery St. Mary is near Exeter, where Rowling attended university. So it's feasible that she
aware of it.
Yeah, knew the area. Yeah. And on an episode of the Harry Potter Lexicon Minute, which is another Harry Potter podcast that I think is very good, which is like kind of, I say short form because we crank out hour long episodes where I talk about Molly Weasley, but they do like a few minutes and it's kind of long essays about the Harry Potter series. The king of the Harry Potter Lexicon Minute did one where he writes about his experience visiting Ottery St. Catchpole because he did like a tour of England where he visited a lot of the places mentioned in the Harry Potter series.
So Ottery St. Mary?
Yeah, so he visited Ottery St. Mary. Sorry. He visited Ottery St. Mary and said that there's a town near there called Chudley, C-H-U-D-L-E-I-G-H. So different
like
spelling.
Chudley Cannon.
But like Chudley Cannon. So it's feasible that that might be like the team is based near Ottery St. Catchpole. And that's why Ron is such a big fan of them, because they're his like hometown team. Mm-hmm. So I like that. But he also writes... Stephen Van Der Ark, that there is a farm a mile south of Ottery St. Mary called Burrow Hill Farm. And obviously we can assume that that is the like origins of the borough.
Yeah, that's really cool.
It is really cool. It's a little creepy to think about that. Like if you're just some random person with a farm and then.
And then somebody writes a book about you.
But yeah, I thought that was really cool. And Pottermore does confirm that Ottery St. Catchpole is in Devon, which is the area of England where Ottery St. Mary actually is. Mm-hmm. So they're in the same area. As far as Burrow Hill Farm being south of Ottery St. Catchpole, I turned up some websites on the internet where some really intrepid fans got a little tinfoil hatty and tried to triangulate which cardinal direction the borough was from Ottery St. Catchpole using the positions of the sun and like real world hills that are then mentioned in later chapters of the book when they walk from the borough into town. It was real weird. I'm going to link them because like good for those people for putting in that effort, but yeah, that got a little far for me. yeah, but I think that that's cool. And I'll definitely link there's a picture of Burrow Hill Farm that you can look at. It doesn't look anything like the Burrow, obviously, but I think that that's
it doesn't look
cool.
Like a pig pen that had several floors haphazardly put on.
No, not quite.
That wouldn't stand without the use of magic.
Yeah. And I mean, there is an obvious source for the name Burrow being where weasels live. Mm-hmm. But yeah, I really enjoyed that. And I love the Burrow so much. The Burrow is great because it truly is like a depiction of home. It's a little messy, like she talks about the boots stacked up by the door and the chickens running around. But it's so warm and welcoming. And there's another really good episode of the Harry Potter Lexicon Minute where somebody named Eileen Jones explores the contrast between Privet Drive and the Burrow, how the Burrow is so free. The kids are kind of allowed to do what they want, or at least Harry is. It's like, yeah, you can go to bed. Oh, no, I really want to see the denoming. Whereas in Privet Drive, of course, the Dursleys are always like, hey, clean the dishes, clean the floor, stay in your room, that kind of thing. And then the level of order that's there, that the Burrow is kind of messy and there's stuff scattered all around and there's like 84 people living there. Compared to the suburbia of Privet Drive is a big difference. Suburbia being very uniform and very tidy. And it's a really nice contrast that Rowling draws, I think. And it adds to the Burrow feeling like home for Harry.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And so with you saying that Harry was forced to do all these chores at Privet Drive, but not at the Burrow, obviously the kids that live at the Burrow, the Weasleys themselves, had to do chores. But it also seemed like them having to denome at that moment was just a punishment.
Yeah. And yeah, I do believe that they do take part in the chores, but we kind of see that Molly also uses magic to deal with some of them, which I have further comments on. But so they get to the Burrow, they land the car, and they're kind of approaching the house. And George and Ron talk about their plan. Which is to go into their beds, pretend that they were asleep in them all night, and then be like, look who showed up in the night. This is the dumbest plan I've ever heard. This is real bad.
Well, if they were able to get to their beds, I don't see a problem with it.
You don't see a problem with Harry just showed up in the
Harry
night?
Harry just got here.
I think that Arthur and Molly would have some questions.
It's not a great plan.
No.
But it would be better than...
This is why they need Hermione. Hermione would come up with a much better plan.
Well, Hermione wouldn't have agreed to do
this. That's true. That's fair. And to be fair, Molly does say, like, we were about to come ourselves.
Yeah.
Yeah. Molly Weasley shows up. And has such an iconic, like, speech to them, like, bed's empty, no note, car gone, out of my mind. It's so good. I love her. Let's talk about Molly Weasley.
Yes.
You know I've been waiting for this.
I know.
I started this podcast so I could have a platform to evangelize about Molly Weasley. All right. Molly Weasley. First name, Molly. This probably comes from the word mollycoddle, which means to treat someone or something in an indulgent or overprotective way. That is spot on, Molly Weasley. Her maiden name is Pruitt, which Rowling borrowed from her friend Jill Pruitt. Cool.
Cool, yeah.
Awesome. It's Molly Weasley.
Now, when are we told that?
Or
does she just kind of retcon that in later?
That might be external stuff. I don't know that they ever mention her maiden name in the books.
Okay.
This, we've been trying to not talk too much about the movies in this, but I thought that this was really interesting. So for the movies, when they were casting the part of Molly Weasley, Rosie O'Donnell volunteered to play Molly Weasley. Like, she really wanted to be Molly Weasley. And she said, I'll do it without pay. Like, I just want to be in this movie as Molly Weasley. Unfortunately, the filmmakers wanted an all-British cast.
Yeah, well, that was one of J.K. Rowling's stipulations, and that was why we didn't have Robin Williams as
Hagrid.
Yeah.
I brought that up, too, because this was in an interview that Rosie O'Donnell did with Rowling. She had her on her show and, like, confronted her about it. Not really, but, yeah, she talked about this. Unfortunately, Rosie O'Donnell was not allowed to play Molly Weasley. I say that unfortunately. I don't think Rosie O'Donnell would have been right for the role of Molly Weasley, but
the actress that they got for
Julie
Molly
Walters
Weasley is
very good. She's really good. And she's a ginger, which is a big part of it, I think. Rosie mm-hmm. O'Donnell is not. But O'Donnell was allowed, because she couldn't play the role of Molly Weasley, she was allowed to handwrite Molly's signature for the books. So all the letters that she writes, you know, they have the character signature that was Rosie mm-hmm. O'Donnell that wrote
it. Oh, that's cool.
I think that is really cool. Yeah, and in the interview, Rosie O'Donnell talks about this, and she's like, it's also why Robin Williams isn't in these movies. yeah, so I thought that that was some cool trivia that I didn't know. And now I want to have a talk about Molly Weasley. Some people have criticized Molly Weasley as being, some feminist critics have brought up that she is a very traditional housewife and have criticized her limited role for that. How do you feel about this?
So Molly does have like the relatively stereotypical role of she is a stay-at-home mom. Mm-hmm. She takes care of her kids. She
birthed seven kids, which is a
seven kids
real achievement.
both of my parents are one of seven. Neither of them grew up on a farm. And she seems to have a pretty big garden where, like, that kind of makes sense. That's the mindset behind older generations having a lot of kids was...
Oh, helpers on the farm.
Helpers on the farm. Mm-hmm. And before that was kids died quick.
I don't think that that's why we're supposed to believe that Molly and Arthur have a lot of kids.
No.
I think there are other reasons.
They're very Catholic.
Yeah. no, I think they have a happy marriage.
Yes.
But go on.
But I don't see that as a criticism of her character. I think, you know, even if she is written as a stereotypic housewife, she is still written as a very powerful figure and a, you know, caring mother. Mm-hmm. And there's nothing wrong with that position.
Yeah.
Saying like, how dare she be a housewife is really just looking down on people that are housewives. It doesn't diminish them as people. Mm-hmm. So,
yeah, I agree. Thank you for explaining why it's okay for Molly to be a housewife as a man.
You literally asked me.
I know. I think that that was a very thoughtful comment. I just have to make fun of you a little bit for your manhood, because somebody has to. But no, I agree with you. I think that she is a powerful figure. And I think that she fills a really important role in these books. That the thing that Harry is missing is a family and parents. And so Molly is a really powerful surrogate mother to Harry, and such just a caring and loving person who looms so large in these books to me. And I think it's notable too that she does have the run of the house, that Arthur almost feels like another one of the kids in the house, you know.
She Molly is taking care of him essentially.
Yeah. And
reprimanding him.
Yeah. She reprimands him. She's responsible for the punishment of all of the children. And there's even a line here where it says that, like, Fred, George, Ron, they were all taller than Molly, but they were scared of her.
Yeah.
So I think that her womanhood is never made to be a weakness. If anything, it's a strength of hers, and her, and even her status as a housewife, it's a strength of hers because it creates her as this loving figure. And we'll see, particularly in the last book, that she is still a very powerful witch.
Yes.
Now, sort of related is, folks have also compared her to Mrs. Bennet in Jane Austen's Pride and Prejudice. Now, Jo unfortunately has stubbornly refused to read Pride and Prejudice or watch any of the great Pride and Prejudice adaptations out there. So I will explain.
Didn't I watch part of one of them? What is Clueless supposed to be?
Clueless is Emma.
Okay.
Rowling is a big Austen fan, and she has said that Emma is her favorite. But folks have compared Molly Weasley to Mrs. Bennet, who is like the ultimate mother of the Jane Austen series. And there's a lot we can talk about with motherhood and moms in Jane Austen. But Mrs. Bennet is a comic relief character in Pride and Prejudice.
I have watched Pride and Prejudice versus Zombies.
I don't want to talk about that.
Or is it Pride and Prejudice and Zombies?
Pride and Prejudice and Zombies.
Okay.
Pride and Prejudice versus Zombies would be the book fighting the zombies. Which I almost would prefer to watch to the drivel that they put out for that movie. Anyway, Matt Smith as Mr. Collins was a good casting choice. But anyway, Mrs. Bennet is a comic relief character in Pride and Prejudice. So the Bennets have five daughters. Jane, Lizzie, Lydia, Kitty, Mary. Yeah, five daughters. And women can't inherit. So Mrs. Bennet's whole mission throughout the whole book is to get her daughters married and married well. She is singularly focused on this, to the point where she has Jane, her eldest daughter, walk several miles in the rain to go visit a potential husband. And when it starts raining and Jane has already left, they'll be like, oh, no, Jane, she's going to get sick, because getting sick in the rain is like one of the worst things that could happen to you in a Jane Austen novel. They're like, Jane's going to get sick. Mrs. Bennet's like, oh, no, she'll get sick and have to stay there, and they'll have to take care of her for several days. And it's clear that, you know, my plan's all coming together. And Mr. Bennet razzes her, saying, like, you know, you can sleep well knowing that if your daughter dies, it was in pursuit of a husband. So she's very much a comic relief character, and her ridiculousness and her focus on marriage is kind of antithetical to Elizabeth's stance of believing that marriage should be about love and it shouldn't be just something about convenience. So she's not a character that Austen clearly thought well of. And so I have some problems with this comparison. But I do think that, on the other hand, Mrs. Bennet is humanized. And like you said about Molly, yes, being a housewife, but being a really powerful woman, and the housewife role not being all that's about her, I think that there is a commentary to be had about Mrs. Bennet, about how she is really just trying to do the best for her children. In getting them married, because she knows that an unmarried woman in that time really doesn't have, you know, any outlook on life. So, yeah, I wanted to talk a little bit about that. So based on your limited knowledge of Pride and Prejudice, how do you feel?
I mean, you haven't explained how they're similar.
They're mothers.
Wasn't that a shallow bridge?
I do think that Molly is to some level a comic relief character. They're both overbearing mothers in a way. They're both mothers that think they know what's best for their children and try to impose that kind of at any cost. It's hard to say, but
okay. So how
Mrs. Bennet is an iconic mother in literature.
All right. What exactly do you want me to say?
I'm just curious if you have any thoughts about that. If you don't, it's okay.
Literally none.
Okay. Great. All right.
Had I read the books or watched the movies?
There's one book.
Sure. I don't remember Mrs. Bennet's character in Pride and Prejudice and Zombies. Was she one of the zombies?
I don't think so. I don't remember either. I've done what I can to try to forget that
movie.
It's
been a while.
So that's all my background on Molly Weasley. Of course, she does a lot in this chapter that we can talk about and fawn over. But we can move on from my background on Molly Weasley. All right. So Molly unloads on her sons, talks to them about how stupid this was, how dangerous it was, how worried she was. And then she
turns. So they could have crashed. They could have gotten their father fired.
Yeah.
And then she goes on about how, you know, I never had trouble like this from Bill or Charlie or Percy. So Fred goes, perfect, Percy.
Yeah.
So she goes off on another tangent.
Yeah. And as a baby of the family, somebody with older siblings, I've definitely heard that, like, your siblings never gave me this problem. Like, they all were totally normal. That wasn't the case. But yeah, I've definitely heard that. And so she has this whole speech for them. And then she turns to Harry.
I'm very pleased to see you, Harry, dear.
Come on in and have some breakfast. Oh, she's so good. I love her.
She's the perfect host.
She is. She truly is.
Like, and she genuinely cares about him.
Yes. And like, that's the thing, too, of like saying she's the perfect host. I feel like hosts, it often seems a little insincere. Like, I'm hosting you because I have to. And yes, I'm being really nice and I want you to be comfortable. But like,
but you're a guest here.
You're a guest in my home.
Yeah.
She wants Harry to be in this house. She treats him honestly better than her sons.
Yep.
Yeah, she has so much love to give, and she truly does welcome Harry into the home, which is, and like, it's a funny scene of her turning to Harry and be like, come on and have some breakfast. But it
takes Harry a second to
be like,
like, because it says she turned on Harry.
Yeah. And he's like, I'm ready for it.
He backs away. He's like, oh no, what's about to happen? Come on in.
Yeah. And I think that too, that speaks to Harry's relationship with parent figures too, that like, to this point, Petunia is his mother figure, and he's accustomed to, like, when they turn to you and talk to you, it's because they got some bad stuff to say to you,
or at the very least they have a job for you.
Yeah. And he's like, I gotta gird myself, I gotta be ready for this. And so for her to welcome him in and invite him to have some food and not say like, go make the bacon, and yeah, it's like a big change for him.
That's the nicest he's been talked to
probably
since
ever.
School ended.
Nobody at school is really nice to him either.
There's Hagrid.
Yeah, that's fair. But Hagrid also feeds him like rock cakes.
He tries his best.
So he goes into the house. There's a clock there marked with, instead of numbers, it says, time to make tea, time to feed the chickens, you're late.
And only one hand, like, yeah. Only one hand on the clock.
Yeah, it's not possible for it to be time to make tea and time to feed the chickens. I would like to have this clock for you. I feel like this would be more helpful to you than numbers.
Does it update itself for me?
Yeah, of course. It's magic, Joe.
Yeah, I guess. Because, not every day do I have to feed the chickens, but, you know, if it's going to automatically put on there, okay, it's time for you to go to your doctor's appointment, you know, that'd be some convenient stuff.
That's also known as a phone.
Yeah, like, but you have calendar. To set those. I want it to be completely automatic.
But yeah, I found this interesting because, like, I always think of that clock that they show in the movie with the heads on it for each family member that says, like, in prison or, like, at work.
In prison, yes. Like most Weasley.
Yeah. No, that is on the clock in the movie.
Oh, prison is there.
Prison is one of the options. But yeah, I guess that wasn't in the books. I always thought it was from the books.
I mean, it may be in later books.
That's fair. Yeah. But so I really enjoyed that clock. Mrs. Weasley is also listening to a radio show called Witching Hour, which is a great name for a magical radio show. Mm-hmm. And also probably what we should have called this podcast.
That would limit us to an hour, which is not always the case.
We only went over it once, I think, actually.
Okay.
I think 117 was the first one. This one's getting close. Can you believe that? Arguably one of the most important chapters, the last chapter of Philosopher's Stone, is going to be shorter than this one because this one has Molly Weasley in it.
I believe it.
Yeah. Witching Hour features Celestina Warbeck, who is a singer in the Harry Potter universe. And I do want to read some of Rowling's comments on her on Pottermore. So again, this is verbatim from Rowling. Celestina is one of my favorite offstage characters in the whole series and has been part of the Potter world ever since its inception, making an early appearance in the short-lived Daily Prophet series I produced for members of the equally short-lived fan club run by my British publisher, Bloomsbury. Although we never lay eyes on Celestina during the whole 7 volumes of the Potter books, I always imagined her to resemble Shirley Bassey in both looks and style. I stole her name from a friend with whom I worked years ago at Amnesty International's headquarters in London. Celestina was simply begging to be scooped up and attached to a glamorous witch, which I think is a fun story about her, her background, mm-hmm. The name specifically. In my head, Celestina Warbeck is Celine Dion, though.
Okay.
Yeah, I don't know why. I guess Celestina, Celine, like, it sounds similar.
Close enough.
But yeah, in my brain, she is Celine Dion. So I liked that detail. Another detail about Molly Weasley. Molly magics the dishes to start cleaning themselves, which, God, I would love to have that. Mm-hmm. But also known as a dishwasher, which I don't have. So Molly magics the dishes to start cleaning. They sit down. She puts some sausages on Harry's plate. And then she butters a roll for Harry. I think this is where I put on my tinfoil hat. I think that this is so meaningful that she she could theoretically use the buttering charm to butter Harry's roll, but that she takes the time to physically do it for him, I think, is just another gesture of love and welcoming towards him, that she isn't going to just do it through magic because that's impersonal.
Rowling does do this in other areas that we can't quite talk about yet, of just the person is doing something physically on their own without the use of magic to show the importance, the significance of the task or the care that they're putting into it. And it's interesting in this world of magic that she created to be like, well, this is significant, so it's not going to be magic.
Yeah. Yeah. Because these books aren't about magic. They're about that human relationship and love, really.
And magic.
But that the human relationship and the gesture supersedes the magic. Yeah, I just thought that was so sweet. So they sit down to breakfast. Ginny runs down the stairs, sees Harry, then runs back up. And I want to talk about Ginny, who's my other favorite character.
It's going to be a long chapter, folks.
I don't know, other favorite character. It goes like Hermione and Molly swap places, and then Ginny is below the two of them.
Swap place? You mean just tied?
But like in this chapter, yeah, Molly is my favorite character.
Yeah,
and
Hermione's not
I don't
there.
Care about Hermione, but like then there will be a really good Hermione character and I'll be like, that's it. Hermione's my favorite. yeah, I love Ginny though. And Ginny has been one of my favorite characters. Like even as a kid, I really liked Ginny.
Mm-hmm. You as a little girl related well to the little girl of the series.
Yeah, I guess that's fair. But no, like there's also Hermione to relate to and who I did absolutely identify mm-hmm. with. But Ginny has something in that she is the youngest of her siblings. So not to say that she has the same burden as Ron, especially because she's the only girl in the family. But she does still have that feeling of like, I have to prove myself. I don't think that it affects her the way it does Ron. But I definitely related to that. And I think that Ginny is really fiery. I think that, you know, no pun intended, but I think that she has a real spirit that we see develop in the books that I really admired as a kid. Mm-hmm. That, you know, she knew what she wanted and she wasn't afraid to go after it, to speak very obliquely. She has a drive to her and she is her own independent person and she has some power to her, too, that we see she becomes like a really powerful fighter, too. So I really like Ginny. Ginny's full name is Ginnerva, which was a point of contention until it was canonized in Deathly Hallows. Everybody assumed it was Virginia because Ginny is a mm-hmm. common nickname for somebody named Virginia, and it's a much more common name than Ginnerva. but Ginnerva is the Italian form of Guinevere, who is King Arthur's wife. A lot of the Weasleys are named for King Arthur characters. Arthur, mm-hmm. Percy, and Ginny. So that's a fun pattern. King Arthur being a hero and having a wife named Guinevere, significant. And yeah, I really love her. And the movies did her real dirty.
They really do.
They like
We can't. We can't get into
the movies.
It.
Do a lot wrong. They get a lot of things wrong. I think Ginny is one of the worst offenses they have committed.
That and spew, but we can't.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. yeah, that's all I really have to say about Ginny. She does have brown eyes, which is interesting. I don't know if we have any, like, explicitly mentioned brown-eyed characters to this point.
Well, what color are Ron's eyes?
Great question.
Because they're not
Google
green.
That real quick.
Just Ron. What color are Ron's eyes?
Blue. Okay. Ginny leaves the kitchen.
Yes, so Ginny pops in, notices Harry, and mm-hmm. runs away. And
I don't remember if this is the conversation in the book, but in the movie, Ginny runs down the stairs and asks if Molly has seen her jumper, and Molly says, like, oh, yeah, it was on the cat, I think is really funny.
No, she says nothing and runs away.
Okay,
in the book.
That's what I thought.
And then they talk about how she's been talking about Harry all summer. And Fred and George joke that she's going to ask for his autograph.
Yeah. Real recognizes real. So, yeah, I like the idea, though, that Ginny, at 10 years old, saw Harry at King's Cross Station and has been obsessed ever since then.
Yeah, because she does not see him again.
No. And you have to figure, too, that She might have seen him at King's Cross.
The second time?
Yeah, like at the end of the book.
I guess. But they don't explicitly... wasn't specified.
No.
Yeah.
But I do like to think about, too, that now that Ron is in Hogwarts, Ginny is just alone with her parents.
Yeah.
I really like to think about what that life is like.
Well, we could ask Alexa.
I do ask your sister every time I see her. I'm like, how is it living alone with your parents?
And the answer is essentially, well, they kind of ignore me now.
I think that's funny. So I like to imagine her alone with her parents, just obsessing over Harry Potter. I think it's funny. So the boys go out to Denome the Garden. And that's a great mini game in the Harry Potter and the Chamber of Secrets Game Boy Color game.
I forgot how accurate it was.
Which one are you talking about? I'm talking about the GBC one.
Oh, no. I'm talking about the PlayStation 2 Chamber of Secrets video game where you spin around the gnomes and you fling them. And that's exactly what they describe in this book.
Yeah.
You swing. I mean, in the video game, they spin their whole body. It seems like
they're just lassoing it. Yeah. We're doing the motion.
Yeah, we are.
Do it into the microphone so that listeners can hear.
Yeah. but they just you flail the gnome so it gets dizzy.
And
you make it as dizzy as you can and you throw it as far as you can.
I like that this is the best solution that they have.
I mean, it's that or you get rid of them in a more permanent way, which I'm sure they're against.
Yeah.
Especially because they can talk. So they're like sentient beings.
Yes, I'm saying that there's no magic. Like, there's not a spell they can use
just make them dizzy so they can't find their way back.
I really enjoyed that.
Yeah, so Harry is resistant at first. He's like, well, this seems very cruel. I'm not going to do that. So he picks one up and he drops it over, the fence.
Or whatever, yeah.
In hopes that it will just leave. And it decides to instead bite onto Harry.
Yeah. And he's like, these gnomes got to go.
And then, yes.
And then his next throw
is the farthest of their throws.
So it's a nice scene between the boys. Then Arthur comes home and they all rush into the house to go and greet him. They're like, Dad's home. I have to ask you this. Is this a thing that kids do?
So we did skip over when they are sent to go demonoming, Molly opens up her Gilderoy Lockhart book on removing pests.
Yes.
But this is clearly something they do on a regular basis. They regularly go out and denome.
And she's like, I gotta see what Lockhart says.
Let's just see. This is my new Lockhart book.
She does not share what he says.
Well, they kind of say, we don't need that.
Yeah.
And then leave. Mm-hmm. So that's why she says, well, if that's what you're gonna do, then there better be no gnomes out there when I go check.
Right. But returning to them rushing in to greet Arthur, if you're done.
Yeah, that's fine.
Okay. Is this a thing that kids do? Like, because I've seen videos of babies on the internet doing this. Like, oh, daddy's home. And they rush to the door. But, these kids are grown. Like, they're teenagers.
Well, they may have been trying to get in front of...
Oh, that's fair.
Mom saying...
Do you know what they did?
Yeah.
But
also, they do come in. They are genuinely interested in, oh,
did you do
today?
This? As a kid, maybe a younger kid?
When I was younger, yeah.
Okay.
My dad made a big deal about it. But yeah, so my dad did make a big deal about it. And then when we stopped, he was a little pouty about it.
Okay. I'm going to leave that in.
That's fine.
Okay. I did not have that experience as a child, so I was wondering if this seemed off to you. But no, I think that's a good explanation if they want to get in Arthur's good graces before Molly
tells Arthur what happened.
Yeah. And I like the way this scene is played in the movie too, where she's like, they flew the car last night. He's like, really? How'd it go? I think that's a very charming scene.
And that's essentially what happens here as well.
Yeah. Yeah.
But he, Arthur Weasley was also he was doing a full night shift.
Yeah.
So he was gone for a while.
Yeah, I guess theoretically they wouldn't have seen him in a couple days, so they'd be excited.
I don't know about a couple days, but it was for a while.
Well, if he's working multiple overnights, he's on a different schedule than them, so.
And he had just gone on a bunch of raids, so.
Yeah, all right.
It wasn't all just.
It wasn't all self-motivated.
Yeah.
Yeah, so I would love to give Arthur a space to like talk about him and his backstory and behind the scenes stuff, but there's nothing. King Arthur is a thing, and I already talked about that pattern, and that's all I got until we get to book five. So Rowling really hasn't like made any comments about him, so
he's just the dad.
Yeah, he's Arthur. I really like Arthur though.
Yeah. I like that he explains one of the things that they found was shrinking keys.
Yeah.
Which is like it's called muggle baiting, essentially just torturing muggles.
Yeah.
Because they'll refuse to admit that their keys are shrinking and disappearing.
Yeah.
And just assume that they're losing their keys.
Which I really like as a way of like contextualizing magic within our own world. You mm-hmm. know, like it's kind of nice to be like, maybe my keys are shrinking. Maybe I'm not just terrible at finding my keys. I found that really charming. You get it?
Yeah.
Arthur also mentions Mundungus Fletcher, which is a cool little plant that will be harvested in three books.
I'm always curious if it's like, and then she grabbed the name and decided to make that person a character, or
if she was like, oh, I know who he's going to be. I'm going to plant him in early on.
Yeah.
Because
we don't get much about him and we don't get any real context.
For this case, it could have easily been that she was like, I need a name for this character.
Who's a shifty-ish guy.
Yeah, I don't know that we have any explicit, like she has said that she intentionally planted this. I don't think that I haven't seen anything to that effect. But yeah, I always enjoy when she does that.
Yeah.
Either which way, it works out. Mm-hmm. You know, it reads the same to me, so.
And it is nice to like see those little Easter eggs.
Yeah, yeah, which again is what makes this series so much fun to go back and reread.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. But yeah, so talk to us in 7 years when we get to book five. So the boys talk to Arthur, and then Mrs. Weasley appears holding a long poker like a sword, which I love.
Do you think she came over threatening, or she was just making a fire and was like,
both.
Oh, this is the time to...
No, I don't think she was intentionally like, I'm going to bring this poker to abuse my husband with. I think this will work.
Obviously, she wasn't going to hit him with it.
No.
But more as like almost a threat.
Yeah. Yeah. So they Molly and Arthur have a fun
She also
exchange.
Clearly was waiting right outside the room for the perfect time
to swoop in,
to
with,
swoop
her
in with her
poker.
With her line. Because she's like, so Arthur is telling the story and he's, but the things our lot have taken to enchanting, you wouldn't believe. She swoops in like cars, for instance.
I mean, I do definitely love that read of her like waiting outside for the perfect zinger to catch him with. But I also could see it being that she was going to let it fly. Another funny joke. Like she was like, they've had their punishment. They had to go denome the garden.
Oh, she was going to bring it up anyway.
Probably.
But let me speak this read. I guess I like your idea that she was
listening to this conversation. She's like, I'm not going to say anything. I'm not going to say anything. And then for Arthur to like get up on his horse, like, you wouldn't believe some of the stuff that people think is funny and fun to enchant. And then for her to be like, that's it.
Like, final straw.
Yeah, I think both are valid reads.
I definitely like her just outside the door,
yeah,
waiting to whip it open and add her line.
Like with a cup against the door, just like listening.
Or probably just like an open doorway.
Yeah. Mm.
And she's just like leaning against the wall, waiting for her time.
Her moment. Mm. Yeah. So that scene kind of plays. And then Ron shows Harry up to his room, which is.
But before we get to that.
Okay.
So Molly Weasley just straight up didn't know that this car could fly before today.
Yeah, sure.
That just seems so wrong.
Why?
Like, obviously she was aware that he was enchanting some stuff and she wasn't happy about it.
Mm-hmm.
So I guess kind of seeing the mindset
I
of like, let's not tell her.
Suspected that he was doing something with the car. I don't know that she went immediately to he's making it fly.
But for him to have completed it.
Okay, it's good to know that you're uncomfortable with husbands holding secrets from their wives. I'll file that away.
Yeah, so then Molly tells Arthur all about the car getting taken off across the country.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, yeah. It is just like the scene in the movie.
Yeah.
Did you really? Did it go all right? I mean,
that was wrong.
Very wrong indeed.
Yeah, it's funny.
So, yeah, Ron takes that of like, oh, the parents are about to fight. Let's sneak away.
Yeah, yeah. And so Ron shows Harry up to his room. And
while they go,
Ginny is peering out the door,
yeah.
waiting for them to go by.
Harry makes eye contact with her and then she slams the door.
Yeah, that tracks. but this is a very intimate scene, I think, of Ron showing Harry into his room and seeing the posters and him being like, oh, it's kind of small. And I think that this struck a nerve with me because not struck a nerve, but struck a chord, I guess is the better way of saying that, the more positive way of saying that. Because it is a really personal and intimate thing to show a friend your bedroom, I think, at that age, because that is your space that you feel reflects you in some way. And so to welcome somebody into it is to say in a way like, this is me, this is where I am myself. How do you feel about that? And so I like it in that respect, but also going back to that contrast that's drawn between Privet Drive and the Burrow. Granted, Ron never goes into Harry's room, but he sees it and Fred and George go into it. There's not that moment for Harry. It's not like they're in my house. They're in my room. And yeah, things are they're trying to be sneaky and there's not a lot of time. But
and a lot of that was just getting me out of here.
Yeah. And that's what's important about it is that that's not a home to Harry. That's not a place where he feels any kind of comfort or ownership. And so it's another, I think, really good contrast of starting in Harry's room and ending in Ron's room that you see the difference in between these two households, that Ron is allowed to plaster his bedroom with Chudley Cannon's posters and make it his own. And Harry's room, on the other hand, is always Dudley's second bedroom. Mm-hmm. It's not Harry's room, capital H, capital R.
Yeah, it's even Ron's room is labeled Ronald's room.
Right. Yeah, yeah. And so I found this a really, really sweet scene that I really enjoyed between Harry and Ron. And Harry says, like, I think it's perfect. This is the best house I've ever been in. And it's... and that's how the chapter ends.
Yep.
Now it's time for Spell of the Week.
Our spell this week. Originally, I was thinking, oh, let's go with the charm used to used by Molly to make the dishes wash themselves.
Mm-hmm.
But that's the only occurrence of that spell being used. And the only information I could give you is that this is when it's used and it makes dishes wash themselves. There's no, you know, it's a...
It's not very exciting.
It was used non-verbally. We don't have anything about it. So a potential alternative to this would be the scouring charm.
Mm-hmm.
It's a cleaning charm used to make an object clean. Rather than make it clean itself, it just is now clean. But it's also used as punishment by people who swear. You know, you wash their mouth out with soap. This literally causes humans' mouths to be filled with soap.
What is the incantation?
The incantation is Scourgify.
Yes, and that spell does appear in at least Harry Potter and the Chamber of Secrets on the PlayStation.
Scourgify?
Scourgify.
S-K-U-R, all caps, is in the pronunciation.
Scourgify. That's the way he says it in the video game, in Harry Potter and the Chamber of Secrets on the PlayStation 2.
Okay.
Yeah. Scourgify. Yeah, that's what he says. And you use that green goop will, like, block your path or cover treasure chests and use it in the game to clean
to
it
get,
away.
To clean it, yeah. And get rid of it. Yeah.
Yeah. Cool. Good job. We're doing a short focus podcast. Yeah. All right. That was Spell of the Week. And that brings us to the end. I just checked. We have no emails.
What a surprise.
But you can send us an email to owlpost@podtrificustotalis.com with corrections or comments. You can talk to me about Molly Weasley and whether you think she has anything to do with Mrs. Bennet. I would love to engage with you about that. yeah, send us an email just with your thoughts, your experiences reading the Harry Potter series, anything like that. Yeah, have fun. Talk to us. Clearly, we spend way too much time talking to each other. So you can do that. You can follow us on Twitter at Podtrificus, P-O-D-T-R-I-F-I-C-U-S. Follow us on Twitter. We have other things, but I don't check them. I do spend way too much time on Twitter. So, yeah, you can tweet at us. Our DMs are open. So send us a message on Twitter. And then, of course, you can subscribe to the show on Apple Podcasts, Pocket Casts, Spotify, all those places that you find podcasts. You can find us. And if you can't find us, maybe tweet at us and I'll put us on there if we're not already. Yeah, you can do all that cool stuff. You can go to our website, podtrificustotalis.com, where we have detailed show notes, which are way too long. Detailed show notes where I link to all these sources and stuff that we reference in case you need that. And yeah.
That's where we'll be putting the picture of
the owl.
The owl.
Yeah, it's really funny. I can't wait to show it to you. yeah, so, you know, do all that cool stuff. Rate us, review us. Hit that, smash that like button. Is that what they say? Is that what the kids are saying?
I'm not going to justify that with the response.
Okay. Yeah, and you can join us next time for Chapter 4.
At Flourish and Blotts.